Well, happy Thursday. Welcome to another edition of Perspectives from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan, and we thank you so much for being at the other end of the radio waves, the Twitter feed, the email machine, and all the other devices we have to communicate with one another. You're always welcome to be part of the conversation, no matter wherever and however that might lead, at 850-414-1234, or drop us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. A long-standing Tallahassee tradition being right smack dab in the middle of the struggle for equality and civil rights. Starting 60 years ago, the lunch counter sit-ins downtown, there was the city bus boycott, all of the foot soldiers marching for equality, C.K. Steele, and so many other folks, including one of our guests on the program today, a part of that entire scenario, and that continues to this day. We're going to talk about the entire warp and woof of that over the 60-year period on today's Perspectives. And I want to get right to our panel because we have some historical figures here with us today. First, of course, Dr. John Dew. As a young man, he was looking for a place with a history of activism, which is what brought him to Florida A&M University to attend law school, which used to be here in Tallahassee. It has since moved to Orlando. Mm-hmm. That is where John Dew met his future wife, Patricia.
That's right.
And as a newly minted attorney facing Jim Crow laws back in the 1960s,
that's right,
Dr. Dew helped to pioneer the tactic of moving civil rights cases to federal court so his clients would not be at the mercy of biased Southern state courts. That was transformational back in the day, Dr. Dew.
It was. But it was Patricia and Priscilla and the students who were really transformation of America in relation to civil rights back in the 60 years ago.
Well, so many folks talk about Selma and Montgomery of those communities that were so much a part of that, but Tallahassee was right in the middle of that.
Exactly. And I think the reason Tallahassee, being the state capital of the state of Florida, it was a host to two universities, Florida A&M University and Florida State University, with students coming from all over, the country, not just, Florida. But they were inspired by the freedom movement that began with Dr. King, Montgomery, and they decided to replicate the movement here in Tallahassee. And I was in Terre Haute, Indiana. Terre Haute, Indiana is in the north. But even back then, I knew that I had to be involved in the freedom movement because my grandmother told me when I was only 4 years old, Johnny, it's not safe. And you will not be safe. But it's up to you to make it better. So here I am in Indiana trying to figure out how can I get involved in making this a better world for everybody when I saw Patricia Stevens in Jet Magazine being the head of the city movement there in Tallahassee. And Johnita, my daughter's here today. Patricia looked good. And I decided I'm going to get out of Dodge because I was wearing out my welcome in Indiana. Mm-hmm. Indiana is a northern state. And in Indiana, black people didn't want to be called black. They wanted to be called colored, So Indiana, being a northern state, is a state where many blacks who became free of slavery migrated to the north. So they didn't want to have too much to do with southern black folks. But I decided I needed to come to Tallahassee. Yes, sir.
Well, that certainly brought about an entire legacy of a family dedicated to the struggle. You mentioned Patricia and that appearance there in Jet Magazine.
That's right.
Patricia spearheaded those 1960 protests through the local chapter of the Congress of Racial Equality Corps, as we all remembered back then. Now, she passed just over 8 years ago. We do honor her memory today and extend the deepest sympathy to you and the family, John. But as you said, John and Patricia went on to have daughters, both of them also transformative in their own rights. And Janita P. Dew, Senior VP and Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer for Warner Media News and Sports, parent company of CNN, based in Atlanta, is here with us. And Janita, you, what was it like growing up in this family?
Wow. Where do I start? It really was such a unique childhood and upbringing. Annually, instead of going to away for summer vacations, we would go to national NAACP conventions. Community issues were very frequently discussed at the dinner table. If we were all seated together at the dinner table, oftentimes Dad was very involved in community activities with the Dade County Community Relations Board. Our mother continued her activism post-Tallahassee, being very involved as a volunteer for organizations ranging from Title I in education to the local NAACP. And so it was just such an enriching childhood, and also an experience that really showed us by example that one person can make a difference. And something that our mother loved to say is that ordinary people can do extraordinary things. She did not want the movement viewed as elevating any one person or one organization. It was about all of the students, all of the foot soldiers who made a difference. And I do want to mention my aunt again, and I know you mentioned in the introduction, she and my mother co-led those first sit-ins in Tallahassee.
Priscilla.
Yes, my aunt Priscilla Stevens, who is now Priscilla Stevens Krauser. And you can just imagine, you know, they were called in the media the Stevens sisters, not necessarily in a positive way. They were just, but they were dedicated and committed because of their upbringings to make a difference. And so to be able to step into that history in Tallahassee was so important to them, and I'm just so proud of the difference that they made and that this city has made on the nation in terms of the civil rights movement. And it was so important to our mother that Tallahassee's role and all the foot soldiers' contributions be remembered. And that's why she wrote the book Freedom in the Family, along with my sister, Tanana Reeve.
Well, both of you are going to be involved in what's coming up this evening, which is a very special event at the Moon. And Royal King joins us, public information specialist, citizen engagement liaison with Leon County Government, without which this evening's Created Equal event at the Moon would not be possible, being done in conjunction with the Village Square. So, Royal, what is this all about this evening? What's going to be taking place?
So, absolutely, Tom, we'll be bringing together those foot soldiers who made this happen. In 1960, Patricia and Priscilla went into the downtown Woolworth and started a movement that just didn't change our community, but our whole nation, that led to the first jail in the civil rights movement that Henry Steele, who was only 16 at the time, participated in, who will be on that panel tonight. And a big part of what we're going to do is have that conversation about what that experience was like. But ultimately bringing it forward into today and asking the frank but honest hard question, are we sitting together now or have we found other ways to devise ourselves?
So many people say that, oh, we have gone so far beyond that. There's no real vestiges of institutional racism anymore. We are now singing out of the same hymn book. And then you talk to someone like Bob Ratcliffe, who is also here with us, because that battle is now going on very literally in the streets of Tallahassee. Bob, as you may recall, a former Leon County commissioner, he's founder of the Big Bend Voting Rights Project, a nonpartisan group that is focused on registering returning citizens and other hard-to-reach non-voters in the region. Active in voting rights since back in 72. Bob, you were helping Gadsden County break down its barriers to voting. That was coming right off of integration and all. This was the spear of the effort right there, and you're still doing it today.
Well, and back then it was so obviously wrong and unjust. Barely 10% of the adult black population of Gadsden County was registered to vote. And that was by design, by a white power structure that deliberately made it so difficult for blacks to register and intimidated them that we finally organized. I joined the Gadsden County NAACP, and we petitioned the local leaders to open up the books. They refused. We marched from Quincy to Tallahassee. That's a long way, by the way, if you're on foot, with Reverend C.K. Steele at the head of our march. Fortunately, Governor Askew listened to us, opened up the books, and we began a really all-out registration effort there that led to parity and full participation in local government by black citizens in that county. We're still at it.
It was not the end of the story, because that march continues. You may not be hoofing it from Tallahassee to Quincy, but you have been doing an awful lot of foot leather burning over in the city's south side and other lower income neighborhoods, and in fact all over town, where folks who have had a felony conviction may be still denied the right to vote, even though we as voters overwhelmingly approved an amendment to the state constitution a couple years ago that said the franchise is yours, go for it.
Well, and it's not going to be implemented by inaction or accident. It has to. Folks like us have to go all out and find the returning citizens and other hard to reach voters to get them registered. There's no list, so you can't just print out a list and go to those houses and register them. We go to every house in targeted neighborhoods where there's a big difference between voting age adults and the census data, and voter registration numbers, and that's how we find them.
You have a newly registered voter. We're going to meet her in just
Indeed.
A moment as we roll on with this edition of Perspectives. The 60th anniversary of the lunch counter sit-ins here in Florida's capital city is what we're talking about. You are invited to join the conversation too. 850-414-1234. Tonight, created equal, the anniversary of the Tallahassee lunch counter sit-ins. At the Moon gets underway at 6 o'clock, and a star-studded cast and many, many other fascinating developments in the long, long history of the struggle will be discussed in great detail on that tonight. More on that to come on Perspectives from WFSU Public Media. And a reminder, you can always find the show online at WFSU.org. Just go to our website, click on radio, pull down the local programs menu, and click Perspectives. I know it sounds like a lot, but it's easy peasy. We archive past shows. We try to have the latest program up within 24 hours of when it actually appears on the radio. Back to Dr. John Dew. You wanted to follow up on what Bob Ratcliffe was saying about the current impediments to voter registration.
Yes.
What was it like there coming to the very early days, coming off of the Civil War?
Exactly, because Jonathan C. Gibbs is an important historical figure that everyone should learn about. He was the Reconstruction governor of the state of Florida right after the Civil War. And he attempted to implement voting and all those kind of things. But after the Civil War, there was a reaction for blacks to be registered to vote or to be citizens. And this is why it's so important today to know that the idea of public accommodations and voting rights are all tied together, becoming a human being, because black people weren't recognized as a human being back in the 19th century. And it took litigation and civil rights actions that led to the work of Patricia and Priscilla back, in the 20th century to move us this far.
But then that brings us full circle again back to a newly registered voter who joins us, Rebecca Joseph. With the Big Bend Voting Project, volunteers with the Community Law Center, which offers a plethora of helpful services to folks who are getting themselves back on track or just young people who need to be on track to begin with. So, Rebecca, it's so good to have you here. Did this guy show up at your door and say, hey, do you want to vote, or how did that happen for you?
Thank you for having me, and welcome everyone. I really feel honored to be here with all of these amazing people in the room. But my meeting with Bob actually happened organically. It actually happened with me. I had background in data, working with data analytics, and we were at a community event at Watson Temple at one of the local churches, organizing on how we can basically deal with the disadvantages of our community. And he was sharing about what he do through the Big Bend Voting Rights Project, which I found very fascinating because people don't really take the time to do things organic like that. You try to find the quickest way to get your mission across. And the fact that he was wanting to go door to door, I was like, well, how are you tracking this stuff? And he said, well, we can improve. And so we talked about that. And I mean, it's been us ever since, us and our team ever since.
How many people have you visited and just said, hey, is anyone here who has a past felony conviction in need of voter registration? Do you just knock on the door and say, hey, we're here? Or how does that work?
So it depends on who you get on the other side of the door. You just try to go with the flow, really, but most people are inviting. It may sound intimidating, but majority of the people that we speak with, they're supportive. They may already be registered, but there are some who needs to become updated. And whenever they seem intimidated, I just tell them about Amendment 4. What you come to find is those who have criminal records, they're not politically engaged, so they're not aware about Amendment 4. And so I'll just introduce them about the passing of the bill of Amendment 4 and the change. And then once they hear that, and where it's like, oh, you have this clear to vote now, and then they want to get registered. So I've met a lot of people like that, actually.
Okay, and Bob, have you kept track of just how many households have you voted since you started the Big Bend Voting Rights Project?
Well, we've done registrations for about 660 people. That's by going door to door since April. We go out every Saturday, so it's we're up to now probably 30 or 40 per week. We're expanding beyond Leon County, by the way. We're in Gadsden and Jackson County, and next weekend we'll be in Madison County. And we've got several others in line to as well. So it's something we're doing for this whole region, which has historically been neglected. Because the parties that want to register voters, they say, well, there are not a lot of people there, and it's hard to go door to door because everybody's spread out, and so we just won't do it. So our target is the hard cases, the people who otherwise would not know that they can register and that they ought to be registered. A lot of people say, well, it doesn't make any difference. My vote doesn't count, et cetera. And I say, what do you think about $15 an hour? Because that is going to be on the ballot on November 3rd, a $15 an hour minimum wage for everybody in Florida. So that tends to get their attention.
I can understand how that would happen. We also are going to interface with another facet of this whole thing, because it's not just Leon County that's involved in tonight's activity. It is also part of the ongoing efforts of the Village Square to engender more community participation. And by some strange cosmic coincidence, we have the head of the board of the Village Square, who is Bill Maddox, who's joining us by phone. And let's say hi to him. Hey, Bill, how you doing, sir? Thanks for giving us a ring.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Let's talk about Village Square's involvement and your personal involvement in this entire thing. Talking to Dr. Dew here a few minutes ago and his daughter Janita about the Foot Soldiers movement, the Village Square was very much a part of getting that story out to the larger community. Tell us about that.
Well, for me personally, soon after I came to Tallahassee, I attended a program that was part of the KCCI initiative, the Knight Creative Communities Initiative. And basically, it was a group of us that was exploring different things that we could get involved in to kind of help improve the community. And there was a presentation that was put forward by someone in the planning office about the idea of having a commemorative sidewalk to honor the 50th anniversary then of the sidewalk protest. And I knew nothing about this story, had no idea that all of this had happened in Tallahassee. And I was just completely fascinated. And what I think I found compelling wasn't simply the civil rights aspect of this, which is obviously compelling in its own right, and all of the fight for justice that came through these protests. But my background's in opinion journalism, and I've taught a lot of rhetoric workshops and classes and whatnot. And I was just amazed at how skillful these young FAMU students were at making a public argument and in winning over people to the righteousness of their cause, so to speak. So I got involved with Village Square, took a lot of this content to Liz Joyner, our executive director, and I said, wow, this is stuff that we ought to seek to make use of, because in many ways what the Village Square is all about is trying to encourage people to come together to learn from one another, to share their ideas with one another in a civil manner. And if one thinks they've got ideas that others need to consider, you know, we want to see that done in a persuasive way. And this, to me, was some of the kind of best illustrations of persuasive communication that I'd ever seen. So at any rate, we did a program, gosh, now 8-9 years ago, I guess, at a Young Actors Theater, of all things. There was a production of Hairspray, and we had Henry Steele and some others who came in after the program one night and did a panel discussion with us about the protests here and all that had taken place. And then as the 60th anniversary of these protests drew near, we talked with the county and with the Florida Humanities Council and some others about doing a big program like the one that we're going to do tonight that would honor Patricia Stevens Due and her sister Priscilla and Henry Steele and others, John Due, obviously, who was involved in all of this. And it would give us an opportunity not just to pay tribute to their courage and leadership, but also to acquaint young people who may not have heard these stories about what happened here and what they can learn from it, because we think that there's a lot that people of all ages and of all political persuasions can learn from the example of these brave students. And so we're just delighted and honored to be a part of this and to have a chance to elevate these stories, because we think they're really important.
Well, when it comes to the actual first-person account of these early days and what happened in that context, you can't do much better than Dr. John Due. And Dr. Due, if you could talk about folks like C.K. Steele and Pastor R.N. Gooden, and of course, C.K.'s elder son, Henry, and we send deepest condolences to the family, the loss of Daryl, the baby of the family, and a musical brother in arms with me a few weeks ago, which was tragic. But what was it like in those days to work with those people who were also driven like you to see big changes in society?
Tom, you called me Dr. John Due. I didn't call me Attorney John Due, but Dr. John Due, because University of Florida is going to award me a Doctor of Humanities degree in a couple weeks. And that's important to use that term doctor, because it was not just trying to establish civil rights, but to help people to be healed for human rights. And back, trying to answer your question, what motivated our young people to change the law? What motivated them to risk losing their scholarships to go to school? What motivated them, knowing they could go to jail, as already indicated, It was the, I call it the freedom impulse that all of us as human beings have to be free. And that's why I came up here to marry Patricia and be part of these young people who knew very much that their lives were in jeopardy. But for freedom, they had to overcome, not just for black people, for humanity. So that's why I'm so glad to be here today as Dr. John Dew to help heal the sickness that's in this community.
And congratulations on that accolade to Dr. Dew. Janita.
Yes, and I just wanted to follow up a little bit more. I mean, if you think about the students who launched the Tallahassee Core Chapter, right? My mother was 20 years old. My aunt was 21. But they had the support of the elders in the community, elders, the older generation, let's say, in the community, like Reverend C.K. Steele, who had successfully supported the bus boycott in 1956. And so there was that nurturing environment from that older generation, because these students needed support, especially when they were jailed. And so what happened in 1956 really laid the groundwork for Tallahassee to become more active and more engaged. And by the time my mother and my aunt decided to launch that Tallahassee Core Chapter, there was already this freedom of spirit that my father has been talking about. And so Reverend Steele and his family and some of the older members of the community were really such a support system in trying to protect the students as much as they could, but also knowing that they were going to do what they were going to do. And then they would just, you know, take care of things on the back end in terms of helping with communication. For example, when the students were jailed and decided to stay in jail instead of paying the fine, which was really, as Royal said, the first jailing of the nation during the civil rights movement. It was a scary time. Of course, it was scary being in jail. They were, I think 5 or 6 of them ended up staying in jail for the whole sentence, which was reduced to 49 days. But they received a telegram from a young minister who happened to be... I'll say it in a second, who happened to be advocating that we've got to fill the jails to win our civil rights. And the telegram was sent via Reverend Steele. And he said in this telegram, this young minister, going to jail for a righteous cause is a badge of honor and a symbol of dignity. I assure you that your valiant witness is one of the glowing epics of our time, and you are bringing all of America nearer to the threshold of the world's bright tomorrows. Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
Now, this is are these the kinds of stories that are going to come out in the course of this evening's presentation at the Moon Royal? Is that what's going on?
Yes, Tom. And the idea being that when you hear that, there's power in knowing. So we always say that you can only go as far as you know, but you got to understand the history from which you came. So there will be young people there tonight, and the community is still all invited. We're currently at 990 people registered, almost to 1,000 people registered. So the community is definitely interested in hearing these stories and being a part of this movement. And the idea being, again, us going forward. So I'm excited to hear some of these stories, too, from the people that lived them, because kind of like Janita was saying, when you hear it, you know, you think being in jail 49 days. But when you hear it from somebody that lived it, it just kind of connects you deeper to it, to that feeling. And that's what we hope to do tonight, to create some feelings and emotions in the citizens of Leon County that will inspire them to go out and help us in continuing to grow and change our community.
There are still some openings, of course, there. I believe I saw close to the door of the Moon that the fire marshal kind of cuts things off somewhere just south of 1200. How can people register to or find out more to come in?
Yeah, so you can register still online now at leoncountyfl.gov/createdequal. And then also we'll have dinner that people can eat. So if you're worried about missing dinner tonight, don't worry. We got you covered for that. You can come as early as 5:30 to eat. I do want to caution people. It's important that there is expected to be some rain between 4 and 6. But even more to that point, Tom, during this time 60 years ago, Dr. Dew, Patricia, Priscilla, Henry, all of those foot soldiers, Dan Harmling, who will be there tonight, they didn't allow rain or bad weather to stop them from fighting for our rights and our causes. So I just look at that rain as a sign of an opportunity for us to just remind ourselves that that won't stop us from hearing these inspiring stories.
Well, you have more inspiring stories to come right after this upcoming break, which we do not want to cut anyone off in the middle of some important information before we have to go to that. Here as we continue our look at the 60th anniversary of the sit-ins at the lunch counter in downtown Tallahassee, a building which sadly is no longer with us, but there certainly is a place in our hearts for what has occurred here in this community, which has been so instrumental in moving forward the discussion of civil rights, of equal justice for all. And that's what we're talking about here on Perspectives. We'd love to hear from you, too. Please give us a ring at 850-414-1234. You may also email us, perspectives@wfsu.org. More to come. Stick around. Back on Perspectives, the 60th anniversary of Tallahassee lunch counter sit-ins tonight, 6 o'clock at the Moon, part of the Village Squares program in conjunction with Leon County. And a lot of history will be talked about there, but history may be prologue, but it also is still happening almost in a continuous line. And Bob Ratcliffe, as you, in conjunction with your Big Bend Voting Rights Project, go out and do the implementation of Amendment 4 on the ground day after day, how do you impress upon, especially younger people who may not be aware of this history, just how much of a continuum this is, that they are part of something that began so long ago, and they have the potential to change history going forward?
Well, that's true. And when this was, when Amendment 4 was approved in 2018, it was 150 years after the ex-slave owners of Florida inserted into the state, a new state constitution of 1868, a lifetime ban on voting and all other civil rights by ex-felons. And then they went out and, of course, convicted a lot of black people of felonies. And that was their way to suppress the vote. 150 years, nothing happened until the voters decided it was time to introduce justice and fairness into our society and approved Amendment 4. Now, the legislature got busy and decided, well, we can't, we have to restrict people's voting rights. And with 1.4 million potential new voters hanging in the balance, they passed a regressive law to restrict the ability of ex-felons to vote. Well, one of the most egregious part of that is the financial obligations that they call. Now, most of us have no idea what those financial obligations are that are imposed in sentencing. And I have with me a typical sentencing sheet from an ordinary drug possession case in Bay County. And it lists, under court cost, additional court cost, $225. Crimes compensation trust fund, $50. Department of Revenue additional court cost clearing, $3. Local law enforcement education, $2. Gulf Coast Community Justice Assessment Center, $2. Assessment of additional court costs, $65. Crime prevention fund, $50. Cost of prosecution, $100. Indigent Criminal Trust Fund, $50. Public Defender Lien Payment, $300. Now, I thought public defenders were free because that was part of the Supreme Court decision.
If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be provided to you, right?
Well, if the public defender loses your case, apparently you owe him money, which is slightly perverse. Drug Abuse Trust Fund, $10. Fine amount, $200. Next and finally, plus 5% surcharge, $10. So these are...
What's our total there?
Well, the total is $1,127. Now, this is in a society where three quarters of Americans cannot afford a $400, an emergency money of $400. It's in a society that we continue to punish ex-felons by excluding them from meaningful work. So they can't afford to pay. I've been to their houses. I've seen how they live. They can't afford this, fees like this, which are essentially taxes anyway. In Florida, we support our court system with fees and fines.
User fees, essentially.
Yeah, user fees. They're not even user fees. But we think this is unconstitutional, and it probably will be ruled that way when it reaches the 11th Circuit in the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, which has already said that lack of wealth cannot be a prohibition from voting. So,
Rebecca, this still hangs over so many people. And when you are sentenced in a court, do you get an invoice? Do you say, okay, here's all the stuff that you owe?
Well, it is written out, but it's not clear. And so they don't tell you the total. Then they won't give you all the fines up front. You may have, like a court cost fee for the current hearing you have. But then if you go to the clerk, there are so many other fees that are then, that's added on there. So you would, basically get your money together so that you can go pay it and then go find out that it's actually higher than what you planned on paying it. So it's a really difficult process. So for people who have a hard time, being able to afford those fees, it's almost as if it's just like it will never go away, because every time you turn around, you have to pay more. And when you're getting it in, the hundreds, it may be manageable. But for those who get fees in the tens of thousands or more, it almost becomes really astronomical.
And Dr. Jonder, you were saying at the outset, in the wake of the Civil War, this sounds like a very old kind of technique that has been used at least since then to reduce participation in the process.
Exactly. What is going on is a historical process. And you're right. In the 19th century, we had Reconstruction that's supposed to resolve the problems of the Civil War. Now we moved into the 20th century that's supposed to be developing civil rights. But now we're in the 21st century, and we still have a problem dealing with the criminal justice system that you're just talking about. And the fact that we need to help educate our children before they get into jail. And this is one of the things that John Eden and I are working on as to what can we do for the next generation so that they can be motivated to help develop what needs to be done in what? Not the 20th century anymore, dealing with civil rights, but the 21st century. And this is why it's so important that we work with Bob and others to make sure that we tell our children they had to be involved at an early age, even at the age of 4 and 5 years old, before they get to school. Because once they get into school, it's the power politics of what they're going to be taught. They had to be motivated early.
That's why organizations like the Village Square are so important. Efforts around voting rights and criminal justice reform should be bipartisan. And to have an event tonight where you are trying to open up dialogue and bring people together from different backgrounds and perspectives is really, really important. If you think about the civil rights movement and the activities in Tallahassee, they were interracial, intergenerational interreligious, interorganizational groups, different kinds of civil rights groups. You had students, white students involved from all around Florida, along with black students and others from different religions, as I mentioned before, different generations. And so bringing people together to focus on issues like voting rights and criminal justice reform is so important for our society. And you're only going to get that huge support when you can bring people together to understand really the underlying human value of people.
And Roar, that's the entire purpose of this get-together tonight at the Moon, is to continue that conversation. Certainly, Leon County, City of Tallahassee, Village Square, these organizations have been very instrumental in pushing that narrative for quite a while. But it's something that you can't say, okay, we talked about that, let's go on and chat about something else.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And a part of tonight that people will participate in, we'll be doing a mini grant where people can present ideas on, beyond the event, how we can continue that conversation and possibly even grow from the event. But we understand that first big step is getting people, kind of like Janita said, from different backgrounds, races, religions, in a room together, hear this story, hear these lived experiences, but then also have real conversations at their tables that are uncomfortable because we don't grow in spaces of comfort. We have to allow ourselves to go into a space of uncomfort, have these real conversations, be able to disagree, but then we'll also understand better.
And seeing, Bob Ratcliffe, the resurgence in many quarters, and this is totally devoid of political context here, but where some folks now feel empowered to release the demons, as it were, to, oh, it's okay to hate these folks again for whatever reason. We are seeing, apparently, more of that.
Well, it's very troubling. And I see it in the highest levels of state government here. And they use all kinds of euphemisms. Election integrity is one of them. That means let's keep black people from voting. And it's happening right now. And we, unfortunately, don't have an administration in Washington that believes in racial justice and voting justice and civil rights. I mean, what's happening to our country? So, well, but we don't have to accept that, and that's why we have to act and not hold anything back.
Okay, and Rebecca Young, it's that, you know, the demographics are not on the side of the haters.
No,
essentially things are changing, and ultimately, we will not be a majority country.
No. I mean, things are changing. People are a lot more motivated. I credit the internet a lot for getting people who wouldn't typically get a platform to be able to express themselves. But the biggest part is for, like Bob was saying, you get all this pushback from a lot of the leadership, but then you get people who they're pushing back, and I think they're looking at it as those who they are pushing back are unaware. They don't know and don't value these things, and come to find when we go door to door, people do value it. People who you think aren't voting, but the troubling part is the ones who do value it, they also have this mind to think that they're the only ones who value this. They're the only ones who value their voice. They're the only ones who realize that change needs to be made. And once we're able to make a connection, such as being at events like what Village Square is doing, you then get into a room where you have thousands of people and you can see that people are aware and we're all putting an effort, and we just have to be willing to bring it together and connect those dots so that we can make a lasting impact to continue on the fight as Dr. Du did. Back then and as well as for now.
Let's add Reed to the discussion here as we start to wind down this edition of Perspectives. Mr. Mahoney, how are you, sir? Welcome back to the air. Hey, Reed.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
We're doing well, sir. Thank you.
Real quickly, man, and you know, you all are talking about my exact point right now, and I hate to be a fly in the ointment on what's supposed to be a great day. But listening to Commissioner Ratcliffe describe those Bay County fees and fines, et cetera, put a knot in my stomach that I will carry for the rest of the day. That is disgusting. That is not the will of the people. It's not what Amendment 4 was all about. And it is a conscious, as you said, a conscious decision by the power structure to restrict the vote of people who will threaten the power structure as it exists. And we can't tolerate it. There's got to be something that the grassroots can do, and I'm willing to do it if somebody has a suggestion.
Reed, thank you, sir. And we got some folks around the table here, I think, who can suggest that. And Dr. John Dew, you have been following this now for more than 8 decades, sir. Is there reason for hope? Is there reason for folks like Reed to say, hey, there are mechanisms to move this down the line in a forward direction?
Oh, yes, because it's good for business. Surprisingly, the governor of the state of Florida is recognizing restorative justice. And when he had a State of the Union speech, he had the sheriff sitting in the front row, you know. I know it's politics, but it shows that what I try to do as Dr. Dew is when I talked about civil rights, I always went into the chambers of the judge and was able to show him that if you allow these students, you know, to sit in and not punch them, they can bring all the students from Florida A&M and come to the movie theater. Tallahassee will make money. In other words, you have to show is to the economic interests to move human rights because it's good for everybody. And that's how I was able to work as a civil rights lawyer. You won't see my name behind a lot of cases, but you can see my name behind a lot of organizations that I formed. You know, the Welfare Mothers, you know, the labor unions. I helped form 4 labor unions. That was my work as a lawyer, to help people to help themselves, to represent themselves.
You're saying, in other words, that when it comes to a discussion of color, the only color that matters is the color of cold, hard cash.
That's the way it is. I hate to say it. You know, I went in the chambers to the judge and said, now, look here. If you desegregate the movie theater, all the students of Florida and able to come and go ahead and do the right thing. And that's the way it is.
You were talking Common Cause before we had an organization by that name,
weren't
you?
That's right, exactly.
Folks, I've got a quick turn around the table here as we wind down our edition of Perspectives here. And again, Janita, it is such a honor and privilege to meet you here. And any final thoughts that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I'll just channel my mother and share some of her words. She always used to say, stories live forever, but storytellers don't. Listen to the storytellers while you can. And so again, I just want to thank the county and Village Square and everybody else who's been supporting tonight's event. It's not about recognizing any one person or family or organization. It's about reminding us of our past so that we know how we can move forward.
Terrific. Final thought, Royal King.
Just want to invite people out again tonight. On this day, 60 years ago, our civil rights movement within the sit-in movement was birthed here. And students who were young went to jail for the rights that we sometimes forget that are just common to us today. So I just want to invite everybody, 6 p.m. tonight. We got you for dinner. Good time.
All righty. Big Ben Voting Rights Project, Bob Ratcliffe.
Well, I think there are limitless possibilities for progress in this community, but it takes voting. So my message is organize and vote. It's all that counts.
And helping you in that regard, Rebecca Joseph, any thoughts from you, ma'am?
Thank you. We didn't get an opportunity really to discuss what my criminal background, what that was about. But I do believe that, like how Bob Ratcliffe said, that a lot of times we're baited on to, and we become criminal, we receive criminal convictions, which causes us to, or force us really to be set apart from society. But this opportunity, it really is motivating to be able to sit at the table and see things that's being held through Village Square and Dr. Du, and I'm really appreciative of it because it encourages me to keep moving forward and to be change and to encourage change.
Freedom is not free.
I will remember that, Dr. Du.
Dr. Du gets the last word. Thank you, folks, for being part of this great discussion today on Perspectives, produced by WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. We had Taylor Cox and Lido Rawls behind the glass. I'm Tom Flanagan. You know, for the past several years, it seemed most mentions of Tallahassee city government also sparked a discussion of ethics. The city's first appointed ethics officer, who is stepping back from that position, will be our guest next week right here on Perspectives. Don't miss it. We'll see you then.
Perspectives is a production of WFSU Public Media. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcasts.